This is Imperfectly Polished with Monique Bondi. It's styled, not staged.
It's Wednesday, the 17th of June, and welcome to Imperfectly Polished, the space where we explore the realities behind the mask we wear and the stories we don't always tell. June happens to be Men's Mental Health Month, a time dedicated to raising awareness around an issue that affects millions of men around the world, yet remains one of society's most uncomfortable conversations. While awareness campaigns have increased, many men still battle anxiety, depression, loneliness, trauma, burnout, and emotional distress in silence. Some fear judgment, others don't know where to start, and many have spent years believing that vulnerability and strength cannot coexist. Today we're asking the difficult questions. Why do men struggle to seek help? What is the true cost of emotional suppression? How is modern masculinity evolving? And what would a healthier relationship with mental well-being actually look like? Joining me again is Dr. Hanan Pushkin, a counseling psychologist, author, and public speaker, and now podcaster. Mazel tov on that.
Thank you.
No option B. With more than two decades of experience helping people navigate anxiety, trauma, depression, and emotional resilience. Welcome again to Imperfectly Polished.
Thank you very much.
It's under a bit of duress this time. I'm a bit of a nagger.
No, this is great. I'm happy. I'm passionate about this. I think it's an important topic. So this is an absolute pleasure.
Let's get going. When you look at South Africa and maybe worldwide, what concerns you most about the state of men's mental health?
Well, men's mental health, it's a big deal. We know that one in seven people globally live with a mental health disorder. More than 720,000 people die by suicide every year worldwide. Suicide is the third leading cause of death among 15 to 29-year-olds globally. South African men die by suicide roughly 3 to 4 times the rate of South African women. Mental health is a big deal. In South Africa, nearly 8 out of 10 suicide deaths were male. 8 out of 10. So mental health amongst men is the silent killer. Men are generally unwilling to discuss it, to raise it, to share it, to talk about it. And it usually gets disguised through silence, through withdrawal, through not engaging, through pulling back, keeping quiet. So it is a big deal, not just in South Africa. It is a big deal worldwide. And it's something that we need to talk about.
Definitely.
So it's become something that we try to discuss, but it's not something that we yet have fixed, and we need to fix it.
And I think it's also helpful for women to understand it, to maybe see the signs, understand their partner or husbands more, and engage in giving them the opportunity to feel safe to speak about it to them or to a professional.
So it's not only important for women to understand it, it's imperative for women to understand it.
Thanks, Hanan.
Because whilst men must take responsibility for their own mental health, we know that men in healthy relationships fare much better than men who are isolated, who are lonely, who are in bad relationships. So it's imperative for women to be a part of the deal. And by the way, it works the other way around for sure. So men need to understand women and their mental health. And women need to understand men because we do function differently. We don't exhibit and show mental health in the same way. The masks that we wear are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And women need to understand it, see the signs, and be able to support men in what they're going through for sure.
So why do you think men continue to be less likely than women to seek professional help? Or do you see a change in this, specifically maybe in your practice?
So we know that from childhood, men are taught, think about it, don't complain, don't be soft, just handle it, man up.
Mm-hmm.
So when emotional pain arrives, they don't read it as signal. They read it as personal failure. So we are not taught to be vulnerable. We are not taught to share. As a matter of fact, society might sometimes even punish men for being vulnerable and for sharing and for exhibiting or showing emotion. So from a very early age, women are much more socialized and supported in their vulnerability, mm-hmm. and men are punished for their vulnerability. So we learn early on, don't share, don't open up, don't lean on anybody. You're your own responsibility, which, by the way, half of it is not bad because we are our own responsibility. But the other half, when we do need help, we are very scared to share it because it's naturally punished for it. So from a very early age, we learn not to share these things, which obviously comes back to bite us later on.
Has the conversation around men's health generally improved, or has awareness grown faster than action?
So awareness has improved for sure. Mm-hmm. So we've developed these slogans, you know, check on your mate, it's okay to not be okay.
Yes.
Men must talk. So the slogans have improved, but the actions and results haven't. As I've read the stats earlier, whilst we do talk about men should share, men should connect, men should not be isolated, men should show vulnerability, and that is much more accepted. I mean, I see many more male patients in my practice today than I did 10 years ago, and certainly more than I did 20 years ago.
So there is evolvement.
There is, but actions are still not there.
Okay.
So whilst the slogans are there, the actions have not followed. The results have not followed because mental health is getting progressively worse. Depression is getting progressively worse. Anxiety is getting progressively mm-hmm. worse. Stress is getting progressively worse. So whilst the slogans have improved, the actions haven't followed up. And unless we actually design the actions to follow the slogans and help men really achieve results and really feel much more in control of their own identities, then we're going to keep on failing.
Hanan, so what does emotional suffering typically look like when it doesn't look like sadness in men? Catch my point.
Yeah, of course. So again, men do exhibit emotional suffering in different ways because, again, mm-hmm. we are not taught to be vulnerable. As a matter of fact, it's not rewarded. It's sometimes criticized. So what happens when men feel emotionally vulnerable? Well, they don't show it through sadness. They don't show it through I need help. They don't call out for help. So they show it through irritability, mm-hmm. aggression, anger, isolation, and sometimes through quick fixes such as drinking, alcoholism, through gambling, through porn, through taking risks. Suddenly, men are much more inclined to step out of comfort zones and take risks. So through physical exhaustion, mm-hmm. working hard, which is, by the way, the new addiction.
Big new addiction,
which is completely rewarded. So a man showing vulnerability isn't rewarded, but a man working 18 hours a day and literally killing himself physically is rewarded. Society completely applauds that. So it does come in many different colors, in many different shapes. And people around must watch for these things. Mm-hmm. Because when your man is working 18 hours a day, day in, day out, hold on, what does it mean? If your man is drinking a little bit too much, what does it mean? If he's withdrawing, isolating, doesn't want to talk about things, doesn't engage with the kids, doesn't enjoy things that he's used to enjoy, starts withdrawing from life and from hope, which is a big thing, what does it mean? So it doesn't usually come out as in the same way that women's mental ill health comes out. In the same way, it comes out very differently.
So this question comes later, but I'd like to ask it now. Do you think men are open to meds, anxiety and depression meds? What is your thought on that?
So generally no, because
seen as a failure, seen as weakness.
The moment a man is taught from a young age, vulnerability means weakness. The fact that you're not okay or that you're not coping means weakness, which is awful because life is filled with ups and downs. We learn, we fall, we learn, we upgrade ourselves, we level up, we fall again, we fail. That is life, and that is good. That is good. And not only is it good, that's reality. Mm-hmm. That is the way it works. And when men are seen to fail, to fall, and society ridicules them for failing and falling, then men becomes tougher. Mm-hmm. Not tougher in a good way. They don't become more resilient in a good way. They become tougher because now they start hiding the fact that they are not coping. And now imagine a man that learns that vulnerability equals weakness. Now he has to admit that he needs help from a mm-hmm. medicine, from a pill. It doesn't usually align with men's vulnerability equal weakness hypothesis, and therefore they don't. So naturally, men are much less inclined mm-hmm. to go on medication than perhaps somebody that feels much more vulnerable or sees vulnerability as a form of strength as opposed to weakness.
You are with me, Monique Bondi, and we are continuing our conversation with Hanan Bushkin. Hanan, so then what does that look like for how we raising our young sons today versus how maybe the past generations were raised?
So in the past generations, feeling was seen as weakness. If mm-hmm. you feel anything internal as opposed to express it externally. So anger is still seen as strength. So okay. a man being angry is, again, applauded. Okay, he's a man. Or a man feeling resentful and expressing it outward, it's seen, okay, well, he's a man.
Yeah.
But a man feeling depressed or anxious or stressed, that's seen as weakness. So we need to encourage our young children that to learn that emotions are okay. That's the gambit of emotions are part of life. That's normal. So you're going to go through, as I said, your ups and downs. You're going to go through all the 22,000 emotions, and that is okay. The part that we need to teach mm-hmm. men and women, but mainly men, is how to cope with it. So once I feel a certain feeling for certain emotion, what do I do about it in order to achieve the desired results? So I'm allowing myself to feel for sure, and men are very practical. So the aim should not be on what I feel rather, but yes, I'm allowing myself to feel, but what do I do? So the moment you give a man, a young boy, a solution to what they're feeling and don't discourage it and don't discourage the young boy from feeling, you'll have a much healthier mm-hmm. man growing up or growing up adult. The difference between suppression and resilience, suppression is I don't feel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel. I just refuse to acknowledge that I feel. And resiliency is I feel, I got it, but what am I going to do about it?
No option B. Many men are taught from childhood, as you mentioned earlier, the term to man up. What long-term psychological impact can that messages have?
Well, again, it doesn't allow you, it doesn't give you permission to feel.
Yeah.
What does it mean, man up? Man up doesn't mean that whatever I'm feeling is invalid, or doesn't mean whatever I feel is a failure. Man up, what does it mean? We want to get very practical. You know, I call this the chin up versus the chin down approach. Mm-hmm. Did I mention that to you before?
No. I'm just smiling. I think it was like a gym term.
Was it really, eh? So the difference between successful and unsuccessful people, and we know this through research, and talking specifically about men, unsuccessful people feel something and they go deep inside their feelings and they stop there. Successful people, that's what we call the chin down. Successful mm-hmm. people chin up and go, okay, I feel, what can I do about it? We have to get focused externally and not bury ourselves in what we feel. And as I said, that's resilience. Resilience is the acknowledgement that I feel what I feel, which is perfectly legitimate and perfectly normal, right, but what do I do about it? Not how do I absolutely immerse myself in the feeling and stay there mm-hmm. for the next however long. That's not healing. That is playing victim, and that is getting stuck in the moment. You don't have to be stuck in the moment. You can resolve problems by looking outwards and creating the next version of yourself in service of the future version of yourself. So the way we're going to serve young men is not by getting them to feel more, mm-hmm. but rather to acknowledge what they feel and getting them to focus on what can I do about it in order to solve the problem.
I feel like moms bring that out. I might be generalizing in boys these days with that much more soft emotional approach.
Mm.
Or do you think that dads also play a role in that now?
I think we bring different energies to our boys. And yeah. I think it's wonderful that moms bring that into the boys' life.
I'm probably talking about myself.
No, but it's lovely. It's actually, never mind, it's actually very important.
Mm-hmm.
We need boys need that softness.
Mm-hmm.
Boys have emotions. Boys have feelings. Boys feel deeply.
Definitely.
It might not come across as they feel deeply because, as I said, it doesn't or isn't always applauded. But boys feel and they need mom. And they need that softness and they need the hug and they need that. So what do you feel? And what did you feel when you didn't make it into the first team? And what did you feel when
that first team always comes up, eh?
For sure. And how do you feel when your friend said no? How do you feel
yes.
when you were not invited to the party? And how do you feel when you were rejected, or you were told that you're not enough, or that you didn't do well in this social circle? What do you feel? And that's perfect, because it allows men to actually go, actually, what I feel is completely normal. But then they need that masculine side that goes, right, this is what we feel, but what are we going to do? How do we solve the problem? So there's obviously something, and how do we learn? How do we level up? Because the point is that life will trip you. There's no question. Yeah. It will happen to you. It will happen to me. But the question is, what do I do about it? So we need the softness of acknowledging, where am I? What has tripped me? What am I feeling about it? Is the feeling correct? Because I could be feeling something that's incorrect. And what do I do about it next? If we can integrate those two elements, what I feel and then what can I do, you'll have a very mature adult.
Hanan, so it's so interesting because men are so practical. You would think that practicality equals finding a solution and going with it. So in terms of, you know, having therapy or taking medication, those are solutions to a problem, but yet men aren't willing to go down that road.
So it's very important to speak to men in practicalities. Men understand, how do I solve the problem? That's where a lot of the conflict and miscommunication between men and women arise, because the wife will turn to the husband and say, I want you just to hear me out. And the man is hearing, I want you to fix something for me. And usually the woman just wants to be heard, as opposed to her problem being fixed. Mm-hmm. Men understand in terms of fixing. There's a nail. Mm-hmm. How do I drive the nail into the wall? There's a screw. How do I screw the screw into the wall? There's a hole. How do I, you know, plug that hole?
Do many Jewish men know how to do all that?
Well, they call somebody to do that.
I'm stereotyping. Sorry if your husbands can or can't do all of that.
Men love fixing. Men love closing loops. Men love solving puzzles. Mm-hmm. So if you bring a problem to a man, the first thing that he looks at is not what do you feel about it, but rather how do I solve it? So if you can speak to men in that language of, we're not going to, as I said, immerse ourselves in what you feel, but we've got to acknowledge what you feel, because now we can actually drive a particular action to solve the problem. If you can speak to men about specifically in those two terms, what do you feel? What is the problem? What's the solution? Mm-hmm. You'll have a much higher buy-in for men than just, let's just talk about your feelings. I say this in my practice. Mm-hmm. All traditional therapy is all about the shame, how does it make you feel approach, which is, let's just talk about your feelings, which is very traditional, very old school.
Yes.
And perhaps people that need that kind of calibration, that need that kind of support, it's very, very helpful. But men respond much better to, what are we going to do about what you're dealing with? So right now you're in therapy because you're at point A and you want to get to point B. Mm-hmm. And how do we get you to point B? When I speak to men in that language, how do we get you from where you are to where you want to be? Suddenly the eyes light up.
And there's a goal.
There's a goal and there's problem solving.
Yes.
We're going to solve a particular problem, because you're not here for no reason. You're here because you want to move from where you're at to where you want to be, whether you want to be happier, whether you want to be in a much more successful relationship, whether you want to be financially more secure, whether you're lacking a sense of purpose, whether you want to improve on your relationship with your kids. You are here for a reason. And what if I helped you solve that? What if I helped you get from where you're at to your goal?
Do you talk exactly like that?
Completely. And then the eyes light up. They want help.
Yeah.
Great. You're going to get me from point A to point B? Yes. Does that mean we're not going to talk about our feelings? We don't have to. We have to acknowledge the fact that you feel frustrated that you're not at point B. The fact that you feel that you're lonely because you're not connecting to your kids. The fact that you feel alone because you're not connected to your wife. We're going to talk about that for about 3.5 seconds. We're going to acknowledge it, and then we're going to move to the solution. Men love it. And by the way, women love that too. Because women, as much as we say they love to immerse themselves in the feeling, they also want solutions.
Yes.
They come into therapy because they want help. They want to, again, move from point A, where they're at, to another point, a better point. And if we can give them solutions, then they resonate with that too.
So I don't always stick to the exact questions that I'm going to ask. So one that really interests me is, how do you deal with men who were kind of given no choice by their wives to seek therapy?
So one thing that we absolutely resonate and we connect with people that have something in common with us. Mm-hmm. We love people that have something in common with us. So I'll give you an analogy of how I do it with maybe a young boy that comes to see
me. Yes, please.
That is sent by their parents and they don't want to be in therapy.
Yeah.
If I had to shove a conversation down their throat, they naturally will reject me. Mm-hmm. They'll put up a wall. They don't want to talk. But what I do instead of that is we build a trust. Now, the best way to build the trust is to create common denominators. So I'll turn to the young boy and go, we're not going to talk. We don't have to talk. Don't worry. We don't have to open up. But I want to know, so what hobbies do you have? And maybe the boy will say, I like soccer. Oh, really? Do you watch soccer?
Are you in the first team?
Are you in the first team? I do ask that.
We've got to stop.
We don't want to trigger.
Trigger.
I don't know. That's a trigger point.
Yeah.
So I'll say to the young boy, so what soccer team do you like? And he might say, Manchester United. And I go, oh, me too.
But do you really?
I do.
Okay.
So me too. Did you watch the game on Sunday? Can you remember what happened? And before you know it, we have a connection. We have something in common. Young boys really like to connect and trust people that have something in common with them. And by the way, adult men are just young boys. We like to connect.
Scratch the surface and they're just young boys.
Young boys. And we like to connect on things that we have in common. How come the best deals are made on the golf course?
Totally.
Because it's not about us talking. Sit down with a man and try to talk. Nobody opens up.
Yeah.
But suddenly when we talk over golf, golf becomes a common denominator.
Yeah.
We talk over poker night.
Yeah.
Poker night becomes the common denominator. We talk at the once we have a drink or a beer. The common denominator.
Bring out the whiskey, boys.
The common denominator becomes the trusting point.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you find a common denominator between two adults, suddenly the guard comes down because you are safe. The moment you're like me, the moment you like the same soccer team, you like the same soccer player, you like the same soccer club, you like the same drink that I do, you have the same sense of humor, you like the same sport, you like to watch the same thing, suddenly we have something in common and the God can come down because you are part of my tribe. So to answer your question, how do I connect with men that don't want to be there?
Yes.
I don't shove a conversation down their throat. As a matter of fact, I tell all the boys and the men, we don't have to talk. If you want to sit here in silence, that's cool too. There's no pressure. There's no pressure because the moment you force feed somebody that they're not ready to receive, they will reject you. If you're hungry and I shove, ice cream, or let's use another way.
Yeah.
If you're thirsty and I shove a burger down your throat, you'll resent me because I force-fed you something that you didn't need. You needed water. Men don't need a lot of what they don't need. They just need a little bit of what they do. And if you force-feed someone something that they're not ready to receive, they will absolutely reject you. So know what they need, speak to what they need, find those common denominators and the God will come down.
Well, I mean, the fact that they may be sitting there already is, even if they, inverted commas, forced, is a big deal because some men do not do what they don't want to do. They will not even budge. So I guess the fact that they sitting there is an acknowledgement from their part in some small subconscious way that they're okay to be there.
Yeah, so maybe there's a little bit of hope that somebody can actually get me from where I am to where I want to be because I'm in pain on some level, whether I'm in pain financially or in pain in terms of marriage or in pain in terms of a sense of purpose or career. So they are hopeful that somebody can take away their pain in a palatable way. But even if they're there because they're forced to be there, we can still connect.
Yes.
Because here's the truth. Men want to be better. Men want to do better. Men want to be better husbands. They want to be better fathers. They want to be financially more secure. They want to have a sense of purpose and a strong sense of identity. No man wants to stay stuck because it's painful. Being stuck is painful. So when a man sits in front of me, I know there's a part of him, even a small part, that has not given up. That's a fire that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I know that the person or the man that's sitting in front of me has a little bit in them that wants to do better, we can tap into that. But we connect indirectly. We connect through the common denominators. The God comes on and we show them the way.
So we mentioned how emotional avoidance shows up in a man. So if someone is a workaholic, does that become then a socially acceptable form of emotional avoidance? Like high five for working 18 hours.
So a man that works 18 hours, that's the new form of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
As you correctly said, and as we discussed, that's applauded. A man drinking 2 bottles of vodka after work is punished. A man showing anger, driving recklessly, because of frustration, that is punished. A man, you know, being physical or taking risks, unnecessarily financial risks, going gambling, that's punished. But a man working 18 hours a day, society goes, that's someone that I want to emulate. That's someone that I want to copy paste. But that's a new form of addiction that unfortunately is going to get progressively worse. Not only because times are tough and, you know, men need to take responsibility and work harder and earn a living and be financially that stable force in their household, but that is applauded. When a man works 4 hours a day, as an example, and maybe fetches the kids, and that's seen as, what's wrong with you? That's not your role. What do you mean you're working 4 hours a day? What do you mean? Unless you're retired at age, I don't know, 75 or 80. But a man working 18 hours a day, it's like seen as almost like a hero's badge and something that is very much rewarded. So we must watch out for it as women, as men, because that is a silent killer. That nothing in life goes for without a side effect. So if you are prepared to work 18 hours a day, you are going to sacrifice your relationships at home. You're going to sacrifice your health. You're going to sacrifice other things in your world that work is taking over. And I always said, my favorite quote of all time, if you're not the chess player of your life, you're a pawn in someone else's. If you don't know what you want out of life, life will take it away from you. So you got to know. You got to know what your goals are. And if you're not aware of that, your time spent at work and you're not intentional about it, it will be absolutely stolen from you. It's a silent killer. That's one thing that I see all the time.
So when men say, I'm just stressed, what deeper issues may actually be hiding underneath? You know, I'm just stressed is thrown out here, there, and everywhere, all the time.
So men really desire a greater sense of identity. They want to feel like they're contributing. They want to feel that there's a sense of purpose. They want to feel that financially they're stable. They want to be regarded as better fathers, better husbands, as we discussed. And in every man, trust me, I'm telling you, I'm part of that tribe. Every man wants to do better. Every man wants to do better. The moment a man doesn't want to do better, there's something wrong.
Okay.
There's something wrong, and that's what we need to fix, because the fire has slowly died out, or maybe has died. But there's always, I live with hope, always knowing that there's potential to reignite that fire. So when a man is saying, I'm stressed, that means he's feeling stuck in a particular area of their lives. So they're either stuck financially, or they're either stuck into a sense of purpose. They feel that Monday is like Tuesday, like Groundhog Day. They're stuck in their marriage. They're stuck with their relationship with their kids, or they're stuck with their health. Something is going on in their world that's not allowing them to be propelled or move forward. So when a man is saying, I'm stressed, scratch beneath the surface and just ask yourself, what is causing them to feel that sense of stuckness, and how do we help them?
So in the moment, as a wife or a partner, what would your advice be to answer a husband or try and unlock the reasons why he's stressed if he's, let's say, a non-sharer?
So what men want, men, as I said, love to solve problems, right? They like to fix puzzles. So when a man comes and you're lucky enough in your marriage for your husband to be vulnerable enough and feel confident enough in your marriage and trust you enough to go, I'm stressed, the man is not saying, I need you to acknowledge my feelings and stop there. The man is saying, I need you to acknowledge my feelings and help me find a solution, because this is a puzzle that's in front of me and I'm feeling that I'm not able to solve the puzzle. So when a man comes to you and says, I'm stressed, what you should be saying is, I hear you. One, how can I help? What can I do? How do we figure out what are you stressed about? And how do we put together solutions so that you don't have to carry the whole bag or the whole workload? Because man's responsibility is heavy.
Heavy.
We take a lot on, and we are, a lot of the times we discuss at the beginning, we are not always up for asking, can you help?
Yes.
Can you help me carry the load? So when a man is turning to you and saying, I'm stressed, your first thing is, I got you. How can I help you? How can I carry this load? What is going on in your world that I can take this load off and make your world better, easier, more productive, more efficient? And how do I help you carry this in a much more palatable, workable way? If you can help men tap into the solution, you'll have a much more trusting man that's able to open up to you next time. So as I said, it's about acknowledging the feelings, but not stopping there. It's acknowledging the feelings, figuring out where the stress is coming from, and coming up with a solution. So there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, can I help you with the kids?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, not helping you, putting them to bed,
mm-hmm.
but imagine a mom saying to the dad, I see that you're not connecting to the boys.
Mm.
How can I help you connect better? How can I help you sure. have a better relationship with the boys? What can I do? Can I maybe step away when you want to connect with the one?
Mm-hmm.
Can I maybe create the environment that you can connect with the other? Hey, I know that you're stressed at work and financially. What can I help you? How can I help you whilst I can't earn, but can maybe cut out certain things? So instead of me, I don't know, doing my hair every week as an example, can I maybe cut it out to maybe 3 times a month? And I'm telling you, the moment you turn to a man
yes.
and help him find a palatable, workable solution that works for the tribe,
yes.
you'll have a better man. So look for solutions.
So it's small things. You can start off with small things.
You must start off with small things and start off with realistic things.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn to a guy and or to your husband or to your partner and give him something that you can't sustain yourself, then you'll grow resentful.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be something that you're willing to work with. But help a man find a solution to the actual problem as opposed to talking to him about feelings. Because I'm telling you, you'll drain a man in 2.5 seconds the moment you go, let's just talk about your sadness. Let's just talk about or your stress.
He's lost you long ago.
He didn't even hear the beginning.
I didn't actually.
You know, it's interesting because He didn't even hear you. He actually wants to, then at that moment, he wants to find his best friend and go out and have a drink.
Yeah.
Or go out and play golf. Or go out and make poker night happen.
Yeah.
Or go out to work.
Yeah.
Because you're not hearing him.
Yeah.
He doesn't need somebody to mirror his feelings. He wants somebody to acknowledge the feelings and let's find a solution together.
We'll be back right after the ad break with Hanan. What an interesting conversation we're having. So Hanan, what does healthy masculinity look like today then?
Men taking responsibility for how they feel and taking responsibility for all their identities as a father, as a husband, in your profession, as a financial provider, is the one that's leading the family into improvement, mm-hmm. into betterment, into more value. So it's not about taking a step back. It's not about, as I said, immersing yourself in feelings and stopping them.
Mm-hmm.
It's about acknowledging what you're feeling but making your bed, acknowledging your feeling but being a better father, acknowledging your feelings but being a better husband, acknowledging your feeling, being financially more secure, acknowledging your feelings and having a greater sense of purpose.
You make it sound very easy. I mean, there's some fathers who try their best but may not be able to provide financially
but,
or not have a stable job. Or so what do you say about that?
But I want to tell you something. In life, nothing is easy. Easy is not part of the deal.
So hardcore.
easy is not part of the deal. Being financially insecure is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Being financially secure is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a good marriage is hard. Being in a bad marriage is hard. Being in a wonderful relationship with your kids is hard. Having a terrible relationship with your kids is hard. Hard is part of the deal. There's no easy. So whilst, I mean, there's obviously a blueprint and a framework to managing life, this, yeah, in a sentence and in a podcast, it comes across as easy. But in essence, hard is part of the deal. The question is, which hard are you prepared to accept? Do you want the good marriage or do you want the better marriage? Now, by the way, I'm not saying that we all reach. Nobody reaches the top of the mountain. That top of the mountain is an illusion because we get there and we enjoy it for 1 second,
mm-hmm.
and then we look up and go, oh gosh, there's another level to this.
Yeah.
And then we get there, and then we realize, oh gosh, there's another level to this. And the levels never end. And then we get to 120, and then we look down, we see the progress that we've mm-hmm. made, we see the legacy that we've left behind, we see all the improvements, hopefully, that we've had in life, all the people that we've shaped, and we're very proud of that. But there's nothing takes away from a man to look to improve. I'm not saying you'll ever get there. And by the way, I'm not saying that it's possible for every man to be, you know, the number one or in the A team of everything. But here's the key. The chase towards being better
mm-hmm.
is the anchoring part. The chase towards having a better relationship, the chase towards being a better father, the chase towards having financial security. So you could be 120 years old and never get there, but the chase is what gave you that sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The chase is what made you feel anchored and valued and alive. So yes, whilst it might sound easy, of course, life is not easy. And by the way, many men will not get there, as many women never get there. But getting there is not the point. The chasing there is the point. And if you're able to want to do better and you're chasing to be better, then you'll create an incredible sense of purpose.
What daily habits, Hanan, make the biggest difference to emotional well-being, specifically for men?
So
you're going to say be at the gym at 4 a.m.
So I'm going to say not be at the gym at 4 a.m., but look after your health. There's no question. But have routine. Okay. The brain really likes structure. The brain likes to be able to predict what's coming up next. So have structure, have routine, have a diary, wake up and take responsibility. So the first thing that you do, make your bed. The next thing, do you turn to your kids and say good morning? How do you engage with your wife when you wake up in the morning? Or have you prepared the night before for your health? Are you going to the gym later? Are you socializing? Socializing is very important because people calibrate us. People make us feel secure. People make us feel that we're not losing our minds. Human interaction is important. It's important. And when you isolate a man, you'll break him down. So men have to engage, whether it's with their friends or colleagues at work. Make sure that you're working within a structure, within a framework. Have a goal for your work. Know what you want. So take responsibility. And I'm not saying be busy minute to minute to minute to minute where you burn out, but be busy with things that are meaningful to you.
So maybe you can work 4 hours a day and get things done.
So, you know, men attach their identity to what they do.
Yeah.
Generally, women attach their identity to who they are. Mm-hmm. Men attach their identity to what they do. So, for example, if you ask a woman, so tell me about you, the first thing generally a woman would say is, I'm a mother, I'm a wife. She'll talk about their relationships. Men, if you ask them, tell me about yourself, the first thing that they'll say is what they do.
Yes.
Right? I'm an accountant. I'm this, I'm that. So men naturally attach themselves to what they do. So is it enough for a man to do something for 4 hours and be bored for the rest? Mm-hmm. Of course not, because we attach our identity to what we do. So you want to be busy with your day. It doesn't mean that you have to do the same thing for 18 hours.
Yes.
You could do maybe something for 4 hours, something else with your identity for another 2 hours, something else, but you want to be busy. An active mind is a healthy mind, but not an active for someone else, active for me, things that are meaningful to me. So if you can get a man to be busy with productive things that are meaningful to them, you'll have a much, much healthier man.
And sleep?
Everything. Sleep is everything. So looking after your health, which is divided into diet, the food that you put into your body, exercise, and sleep. And if you can tap into those three conduit towards good health, then your body, which is the engine that drives everything, will help you with your mental health. As a matter of fact, that is something that we should have brought up at the beginning of the show, which is you got to look after your health. Mm-hmm. It's a non-negotiable. If you want to be mentally well, mentally healthy, you got to feed the engine that drives it all. And you got to get good sleep. If you're not getting good sleep, you're going to struggle. If you're not eating well, you're going to struggle. If you're not creating some movement, exercise, you are going to struggle. And by the way, do we find men that don't exercise and don't sleep, that don't struggle? Mm-hmm. It's very rare. It's very rare. And every time you don't exercise, every time you don't get good sleep, every time you don't eat well, it's like putting an extra 10 kilograms on your back, and then an extra 20 kilograms on your back, an extra 30 kilograms on your back. And imagine leading life with 30 kilograms extra on your back. It just makes mental health much harder to acquire when you don't look after your body. So definitely look after your health.
So if every man listening, let's hope some are, could make one positive change tomorrow morning, what would you recommend?
Don't neglect what you feel. You don't have to focus on it, but acknowledge what you feel and look forward to fixing the thing that is broken. Men respond well when they're fixing. So if they can acknowledge, take responsibility, knowing that that fire that every man has inside himself, which is the desire to do and be better, is there, and we just need a little spark to ignite that, then that's a great start. But I want to tell every man something. Don't wait for you to feel before you do. The feeling will come post the doing. So if we don't feel like going to the gym, then go to the gym. No. We go to the gym, we create results, and then the feeling comes.
Got it.
We shouldn't wait for feeling to be a better husband or a better father before we do. No, no, no. Go and do it, you create results, and the feelings will come. we don't feel like doing better in our jobs and financial security and then do it. No, no. You go and attempt to do it, you create results and the feelings will come. So I want to tap into men's natural ability to do and go and do, the feelings will come later.
So what gives you hope when it comes to the future of men's mental health, Hanan?
That they want to do better.
Got it.
Every man wants to be
better. Clear and simple.
They want to do better. So if you're seeing a man that is stuck, is down and out, does not want to do better, he's broken. He's broken. But there's always a fire that we can reignite in getting men to tap into the thing that's very natural for them, which is a want to move forward. Your husband wants to do better. Your son wants to do better as a in all their roles. You just got to find the thing that ignites that fire and draws them to want to do better. If you can tap into that, and by the way, that's what I'm hopeful for. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I am hopeful, because that fire will never die. And all we need is just a little spark, and boom, before you know it, you have a massive drive to do better, to execute, to be a better version of themselves.
So do you think in a way that wives or partners play a role in that?
Definitely. The wives, partners, kids, parents play a massive role into that. I'll say it again. Men have an innate drive to do better and be better. If we can ignite that through tapping into what they need and how do I fix the thing that's broken, what I'm stressed over, and I can be a partner to you and take the load off you, you'll have a much more open, vulnerable, a mature young boy turning into an adult man, but tap into that.
I always ask my guests to leave us with something personal. Hanan, what's one lesson you've learned, both professionally and personally, about being human that you wish more men understood?
Wow. Never lose hope. Never lose hope. So if I can share one story before we end, this is one of my favorite pieces of research. And you might have heard of the Hope Experiment.
I haven't.
In 1950, this researcher by the name of Kurt Richter did the most unbelievable piece of research. He took domesticated rats and he put them in a bucket of water and he closed the bucket. And he wanted to see how long the rats would try and survive for. The rats would go up and down, and at the 15-minute mark, they all drowned. They ran out of energy and drowned. He repeated this experiment, took domesticated rats, put them in a bucket of water. At the 15-minute mark, when they were about to drown, he rescued them. He pulled them out. He dried them off. And once they were fine, he put them back in the bucket of water for a second time around to see how long they'd try and survive the second time around. The first set of rats lasted 15 minutes. The second set of rats, 60 hours.
Sure.
Almost 3 days. Days, not minutes. They went from 15 minutes to 60 hours, 240 times longer. Because what did he create? Hope. That we cannot lose. What will make what I find really hopeful in men's mental health and what I hold on to that makes us more human is to never, ever lose hope. Just like I said, men have an innate drive to do better and be better in all their roles. Human nature has an innate drive to always live to something better, knowing that everything is going to be okay, knowing that there's better for me out there. The moment that you live with hope, the body will carry you. You know, when people say to me, I'm burnt out, it's the last thing I'll say.
Yes, we haven't.
When people say
that.
I've burnt out, they're not talking about their bodies. Your body can carry you. They're talking about their mind. And if you can always live with hope, that's the engine that will drive your betterment in every aspect of your life. Never lose hope.
Mental health doesn't discriminate. It affects CEOs and students, fathers, sons, husbands and brothers, the confident and the quietly struggling. What today's conversation reminds us is that strength isn't about carrying everything alone. It's about knowing when to reach out, when to speak, and when to allow yourself to be supported. Again, a huge thank you to Hanan Bushkin, Dr. Hanan Bushkin, for helping us unpack the realities facing men's today and for the challenge for challenging some of the assumptions we've held for generations. And to everyone listening, whether you're struggling with yourself, hopefully some men are listening or their women's will share the podcast with you, or someone supporting who is, remember that seeking help is not a weakness, it's one of the strongest decisions a person can make. Until next time, keep embracing the imperfect and celebrating the polished. This is Imperfectly Polished with me, Monique Bondi.